Rob Walker hops on eBay, as you do, and buys 200 cheap objects for the total price of $129. Obviously, cheap little things. He then hires 200 authors to write short stories about each object. He places them back on eBay for sale and sells them for a total price of $8,000. There was one, he bought this like plastic horse head for 99 cents. With the story attached, it ended up selling for $62.95. Incredible ROI here.
What this example illustrates is something that I think all of us hold to be true, but often overlook, and that is that stories have transformative power. And that's exactly what we're going to look at today. We're going to look at some of the science that shows why stories are so powerful, and then we're going to dig into some methods to help us become better storytellers.
Welcome to the Learner Lab Podcast. I'm Trevor Reagan.
I'm Alex Belser. Each week, we're going to explore a topic to help us become better learners.
If you're interested in more, you could check out thelearnerlab.com for videos, articles, and more pods. Let's go.
What unites people? Armies? Gold? Flags? Stories? There's nothing in the world more powerful than a good story.
Now I know what you're thinking. This is the Learner Lab podcast. We talk about topics that can help us become better learners. Like, what do stories have to do with learning? That's kind of what we thought too. But after an interview with one of the world's best storytellers, we've totally changed our stance.
My name is Matthew Dix. I'm a teacher. I teach elementary school, fifth grade. I'm a storyteller. I stand on stages around the world and tell true stories from my life. I teach storytelling to just about every type of person that you can imagine. You know, the people who come to me are teachers and professors who want to be better in the classroom, and clergy members who have to stand in front of congregations, and people in sales who know that a story can sell a product, or, you know, entrepreneurs who are trying to get, you know, funding from some venture capitalist. And then just a lot of sort of people who have gone through their lives feeling like no one's listening to them. Whatever your job is, I can show you how storytelling can assist you with that job.
Now that's Matthew's like humble introduction of himself, but the numbers don't lie here. He's a 46-time Moth Story Slam champion and actually 6-time Grand Slam champion.
He knows what he's doing with stories.
Yeah, this is one of the best storytellers on the planet.
Matthew is sort of the dream guest for the podcast because not only is he this great storyteller who gives workshops on storytelling, but he's also a fifth grade teacher. So he's going to be our guide today in the episode, and he's going to help us connect the dots between learning and storytelling and help us become better storytellers.
Let's jump in. And I think a good way to come out of the gates is like, let's really put some benefits on the board here. How does this help with communication? Researchers at Stanford set up an experiment where they had two groups of students, and the goal was to memorize a list of 12 words. The first group had to memorize them in a traditional way, like here's your words. The second group was given the same 12 words, but in a story format. They were given the same amount of time, the same 12 words. After a period of learning the words and studying the material, they tested for retention, and what they found was incredible. The retention score for the traditional list group, 13%.
Not great.
Not the best. The retention score for the story group, 93%.
Wow, that's incredible.
Big contrast there, and this is one study, but we found many more. And it's saying something that we kind of all understand. Stories are sticky.
Right, and why are stories stickier? Well, I think it's because we're a bit more engaged whenever we're hearing a story. I don't think that we need an academic study to tell us this. All of us know this to be true, right? Like, if we're reading a list of words, that's not going to be as sticky as if we're going and reading an actual story and we learn a new vocabulary word that way. Like, the stories create higher engagement for us.
Exactly. Engagement is the word here. And a lot of the research that we found, like, kind of proves the point. There are studies where they actually hook people up in an fMRI machine and watch their brain. And our brain on stories looks way different than the brain reading a list. Basically, what the research shows us is when we're listening to a story and we're engaged in that content, we're sort of simulating it. We're living it rather than passively listening to a list of words or a boring PowerPoint.
Right. Like, there are actual regions within our brain that start firing when we're working through something.
Right. So when we're engaged in a story, we're actually more of a participant than a spectator. And the brain scans back that up. There is even a study from, let me get this right, the Laboratory of Language Dynamics in France. And the researcher's name is Veronique Boulanger. When participants simply just read the sentence, John grasped the object or Pablo kicked the ball, regions of their brain light up as if they were doing those things. And even more specifically, it was like when they read the one about kicking the ball, regions of their brain related to their feet lit up.
So they're not even actually kicking the ball, but their brain is still lighting up as if they were.
Yes. And so this goes back to the simulation. When I'm engaged in a good story, it's as if I'm living it. And so I'm engaging with the material in a whole different way, which makes it more likely to stick. I'm going to remember it more tomorrow because I like participated in the material versus passively listening to it.
I think this study makes the point clear, but we don't need an fMRI machine to understand this point. All of us have watched a scary movie and then jumped suddenly because our brain is simulating what's going on and it feels very real to us.
Yet when we're engaged in that movie, we're dodging, we're moving, we're laughing, we're feeling just like the character on the big screen. All examples of simulation.
To be clear, there is a difference between reading about something and actually doing it. Like we're always going to learn more from actually doing it.
Right. Reading isn't replacing the reps at all. But what we're saying is the simulation is 1,000 times better than sitting in your desk passively listening to the stuff.
Exactly. In another study, there was a group of doctors that were trying to get people to adhere to sticking to their blood pressure regimen. So people had really high blood pressure and they wanted them to lower it. And they had two different groups of people. And one group got the traditional, you know, take this pill at this time, eat these types of foods. And then the other group got that. And in addition to that, they also watched a short film of other people who had gone through this experience already and talking about how they were able to control their blood pressure by sticking to this regimen.
This is kind of the more intense version of the original Stanford study. This is not just a list of words and stories about the words. This is an actual program that you can use to lower your blood pressure. And I think that the thing we need to be clear on is both groups received the same program and same material.
Right.
Yet one was in story format where they were watching stories and the other was just like, here's the plan.
Right. The group that received that information in story form was much more likely to adhere to that regimen than the group that just got the basic information. And when researchers were trying to figure out why this was happening, they think it's because the stories gave them some motivation to understand that, oh, if someone in my community can do this, if someone has done this before me, then I can do it too.
Right. Dan Coyle calls that ignition. If they can do it, so can I. And these stories were a tremendous example of that. I think another benefit that we've seen in the research and perhaps happened in this study is when we're engaged in a story, we seem to be more receptive. Actually, chemicals change in our brain. What was the chemical
it's
called again?
Oxytocin. So oxytocin has been linked to building trust and building empathy. And when we're in this empathetic mindset, we're a bit more connected to fellow human beings. And this makes us much more receptive to information.
Also, in a way, this kind of supports the simulation. It's like they're literally hearing from someone who's started the plan, engaged with it, and saw the benefits. There's a small simulation there. So all of these things are why this group was more likely to stick with it and actually lowered their blood pressure. The power of stories.
There's another study that shows that this happens in classrooms too. There was a group of researchers that wanted to see how the way that information was presented impacted motivation of students. And they had three different groups. The first group got information about Einstein and his lifetime achievements, like the great things that he did, you know, winning a Nobel Prize and
the typical things that you would see in a textbook.
Yeah. The second group got things that were associated with his life struggles, so things like fleeing Nazi Germany. And then the third group got information that was talking about his scientific failures, so mistakes in the scientific process and having to persevere through those.
So the groups all received this material, one group about his highlights, one group about his personal struggles, one about his professional struggles.
Right.
What they found is the two groups that received the struggle stories actually did better in the class than the group that received just the highlight reel. And not only that, they were more connected. They felt more connected to the material.
Right. That's the big thing with this study is that they weren't necessarily testing retention here. They were looking at motivation. And they found that the way that the story and the information was presented led to students being more engaged with the material, which made them more motivated to actually work in the class. Stories play a huge role in connection and relatability, and it can really open up some doors for us.
Yeah, they sort of like bring us closer to the storyteller. Like, the audience and the storyteller move closer. Like, they even pulled the students. They felt closer, like more connected to the material in Einstein because they learned from the struggle. This happens all the time when we watch the Olympics. No, sad to say, not this year, but when they come back, like, think about all the times when they show that little, like, 3-minute backstory about one of the athletes. It's like, as soon as I watch that, I am all in. I'm connected. Now, I can't relate to them on an athletic level, but when they give me that backstory about the struggles they've been through, I'm rooting for them for the rest of the Olympics.
Stories are great at building connection, and it can happen in a variety of ways.
Kids are going to learn better from people who they trust and love. And it is impossible to trust and love a human being who remains a black box to you, which is how a lot of teachers, I think, approach the profession. They don't share a lot about their own personal lives. They almost feel like there's no point in sharing their personal lives. Right. And yet I share my personal life constantly with my students, knowing that when I share something, I connect to them and I open a door for them. And so when I tell kids that I was homeless for a period in my life, 2 years ago, after I told them that, a little girl came to me and told me she's living in the car with her mother. And she hadn't told anyone yet. Her mother hadn't told anyone yet. And I was able to get them some help. But it was something she didn't think she could tell anyone because she thought she was the only one. And so just opening up to kids and letting them know that you are flawed and that you are pained and that things don't always work out well for you, that's a big deal, I think, for kids.
A similar thing happens at some of my workshops. I was just doing one a few months ago with a group of sixth graders. And part of the workshop, or part of the presentation, we were talking about fear. And I shared a story how when I was in college, I was like really afraid to speak up in class. And after that presentation, a student came down and shared that she struggles with the exact same thing. Like, what a small connection we built. That was just like one 60-minute talk. But like, the two of us were connected because I shared my story. Now, look, we could go on all day talking about the benefits of stories and how they improve communication. We have a stack of studies that we could share with you. But in the end, they're all kind of pointing in the same direction, saying the same thing. Better communication supported by stories can boost motivation, build connection, and increase retention, which all align with learning skills that we've unpacked in previous episodes. Motivation leads to action, connection builds safety, and retention equals change. Basically, what we're saying is, if you want to build a better learning environment, tell better stories.
Stories aren't some new fad that's just hitting the scene. Stories have been around for thousands of years.
We've been using the power of stories, right?
Like, this is why fables are so popular. This is why fables have survived throughout humanity, because they convey a very simple message in story form, which makes it easier for us to understand it and apply it to our lives.
Yeah, we see all the benefits. I'm more receptive. You're like teaching me a valuable lesson, but I'm more receptive and they stick. Like, I remember these lessons that you taught me in the story format. And that's stood the test of time. So, okay, like, what does this look like in the real world? If I'm a leader of a group, instead of putting our 5 mission statements on the wall in a poster, I should find 5 stories that convey the mission statement. So rather than listing it, tell some stories about it. This can also happen in like small ways. If I'm a teacher, I could tell stories to my students about a student from the past who struggled with some material, but like work their way through it, sort of the struggle story like Einstein. As a leader, I can share stories from my past when I was nervous, when I was scared, but I did something anyways. Like, these are all ways to send powerful signals to our people and teach valuable lessons, but wrapped and packaged in a way that's going to lead to more action and more retention.
So to summarize broadly, stories are a powerful tool for communication. But where we need to focus our attention now is, how do we get better at storytelling?
Obviously, Matthew Dix is the expert here. So we're going to use his insight from the book Storyworthy and the lessons he taught us in the interview to really shape this next section. I think there's 3 pillars we're going to really dig into. One is, we need to redefine stories. We need to upgrade our definition of what we think stories are. We need to collect more stories, and we need to tell more stories. Let's start with upgrading our definition.
Most people think stories are stuff that happened to me, told chronologically over the course of time. You know, so if you come home from work and you ask your spouse, how was your day? if your spouse just gives you a chronological accounting of their day, that is not a story, right? That is just, that's just stuff that is happening. A story is a moment in our lives of transformation or realization. It is, I was once one person, but now I'm another, or I once used to think something about myself, the world, someone else, and now I think another thing. It's that moment of change that really makes it a story. So once we understand that a story is about change over time, what we're looking for is not stuff that happened over the course of time, but a moment of change, a moment where we suddenly realized something important. And if you can just do that, if you can just speak about the moments of transformation in your life, you're already going to be better than most people, because most people just tell stuff.
So rather than thinking about stories as a play-by-play, we should be thinking more about a moment of change that occurs in our life. This could be a moment of realization or a moment of transformation, but the key here is one small moment of change.
Oftentimes we think stories have to be about a big sensational event, like I was deep sea fishing, fell off the boat, survived a shark attack, but look at me, I'm here today. But that's not what a good story is at all.
No, that's the difficult thing about big stories like that is that they're not relatable, right? Like I've never gone deep sea fishing, so I can't really relate to that.
I think Matthew Dix is the ultimate example of this. This guy's had the most like ridiculous life. I think he's died twice. He's been arrested and convicted for a crime he didn't even commit. Like amazing, ridiculous things that I can't relate to. Yet the stories that made me cry and the stories that connected me to him, one was about a can of cranberry sauce.
Even when he's telling those big stories, he ties them to something more universally connective. That's not to say that his big stories aren't great. They are, but they're usually tied to some moment where all of us can relate to it. Because you and I haven't died before, so we don't know what that experience is like. But there are moments in those stories where we can relate to what Matthew Dix is talking about.
Relatable is better than sensational. And this also leads us to like, look, we don't always have to tell stories about our wins. Like we can incorporate some losses. We can talk about our struggles. Just like in the Einstein study, it was better when they shared the struggles than just here's the highlight reel and all the wins that Einstein experienced in his career. One last point I'd like to make in this maybe upgrading the way we think about stories segment is we don't have to like invent stories about everything we're trying to teach. Like if I'm an eighth grade algebra teacher, I don't have to come up with a story about the slope of a line. I can talk about like deeper foundational things, fear, struggle, learning new stuff. It's like I'm teaching foundational skills through my stories. It doesn't have to be about every single lesson. For the volleyball coaches out there, don't worry. You don't have to invent a story about how to jump serve. We can tell stories about foundational stuff.
So when it comes time to solving that equation or teaching that equation, the story might be, I had a really hard time figuring this out when I was in math class. You might be feeling the same way right now. Sure. Automatically, we've now established common ground. It doesn't come as much into the instruction, although it can sometimes. It comes more into the relationship you build with a kid. Okay. And there are some subjects that are more, you know, worthy of storytelling, I guess. Like when I'm giving a spelling test to my fifth graders, I have to provide a sentence to give them context for each word. I tell a story. If I have 20 spelling words, I weave a story around myself or I create a fictional story using those words because I'm making a spelling test entertaining, you know?
Now that we've upgraded our understanding of what makes a good story, we need to turn our attention towards how we can find and capture more stories.
Well, finding stories, I always say, is the most important thing you can do. I would rather hear the right story told poorly than the wrong story told well. And I think most people tell the wrong story. In terms of finding stories, it first starts with the acknowledgement that we all have great stories to tell. I meet tons of people who tell me they have led boring lives and have nothing to tell. And the problem is that they listen to stories about amazing things and they don't have an amazing thing in their life. I was just listening to The Moth this morning. They had a story about twins separated at birth, found each other through social media and reconnected, right? The problem is when we put forth those stories as the best stories to be told, it causes people to feel excluded from the world of storytelling because, well, I am not a separated twin at birth who discovered my identical twin through social media, right? And that's what we hear a lot in terms of storytelling is those big stories. But I always think the small stories are better, the little moments in our lives that just mean more and are more universally connective. So I look for stories in my everyday life. I do something, you know, it's called homework for life, which is a homework assignment I gave to myself about 8 years now ago, and now I give to everyone. And it's simple. It's just the idea that at the end of every day, before you go to bed, you will sit down and ask yourself, what is the most story-worthy moment from your day? What is the moment that makes this day different than any other? Even when that day is absent of anything truly story-worthy, which many of our days are, you're going to force yourself to find something so that if you were forced to take a stage, you must take a stage, and for the next 5 minutes, you must tell a story about something that happened today. What would you choose? And then I write it down. I don't write the whole story down because, you know, 4 or 5 sentences at most, just enough to capture the moment. My goal was find one new story every month, and that would be great. That would be 12 stories in a year, and I'd be thrilled. What happened instead is I discovered our lives are just filled with stories. Mm-hmm. They're filled with meaningful moments that we toss away like trash and place no value upon. Mm. So I write them down. And over the course of time, what I discovered is my life is filled with stories. I have more stories to tell than I have time to tell them. And that has been the case for many, many people. For everyone who engages in this process and commits to it, they discover that their lives are more filled with stories than they could have ever imagined.
Honestly, this is a huge takeaway. When we first talk about stories, so many of us think we're not interesting or we don't have stories to tell because we don't have these grand events. But once we just change our definition of a story, we can find way more from our past and we can capture more as we move forward. Every day now, we're starting to recognize the story-worthy moments.
So we've redefined our understanding of stories, and we've talked about how we can capture and find more stories, but this doesn't get us off the hook for telling more stories. If we want to get good at storytelling, there's no shortcut. We have to tell more stories. We have to practice.
Yep, we've established the theory, but now we have to put it into practice. We have to get the reps. There's no magic there. It's like find opportunities to do it. And just remember, like we talked about, like struggle is a part of the process. The only way to get good at telling stories is to tell some not so good stories. Yeah.
The best thing you can do as a storyteller is to use this sentence all the time. Tell me a story or tell me that story. The best way to become a better storyteller is to hear lots of stories, to open up a space for other people to share. That is going to be both an opportunity to hear stories and to start to think about what's working and what's not in their stories. But quite often, a space will then be opened for you as well. I just meet a lot of people who say, I don't have a chance to tell stories. I don't know how to get a word in edgewise. And one of the best ways to do it is to let someone speak first, to be a good listener. Storytellers are excellent listeners. And I find that listening is a discounted skill that everyone thinks they have. And most people do not have. Most people can't wait to talk. You know, I often tell people, if you find a good beginning and a good ending, you use those strategies alone, you're better than 90% of the people telling stories today.
So we don't have to get too caught up in telling, you know, the perfect story arc or making this elaborate story. If we just focus on finding the right story with a good beginning and a good end, we're already doing a lot better job.
In short, treat this as a skill because it is. Storytellers are built, not born. I think this will go down as one of our most useful episodes that we ever do. Because everybody listening communicates all the time, and this is a superpower skill to help us become better communicators. We'd like to give a special shout out to Matthew Dix. He's taught us so much. Please check out his book, Storyworthy, if you can. Also, his website is matthewdix.com. You can listen to his stories, listen to his podcast, and read some of his blogs. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday.